This is Nick DeFord. I'm the lead pastor at the First Church of the Nazarene in Zephyr Hills, Florida. We're a little bit outside of Tampa, and I've been here about 7 years and counting. Wanted to do a podcast. We will discuss things that are important, things to do with life, things to do with life as a Christian, things to do with life in a small community, and also a lot of my time I'll probably focus on the life of Jesus Christ and what his impact was on the world in the first century as a Jewish man, and what his impact is ongoing in the world today for you and me. How did his life and ministry and his death and resurrection and ascension into heaven, how did that affect the world forever, and what are the implications for our life? I hope that you'll tune in, subscribe to this podcast, and keep tuning into it, because I'm planning on sharing anything that I learned that's maybe interesting enough to pass along. I want to be a conduit and a resource for you. As always, if you have any questions, comments, or if there's any topics you'd like to hear discussed, send me an email at PastorNickDeFord@gmail.com. Hope to hear from you soon. Thanks. I wanted to talk about changing a community, and some of my thoughts on this stem from missionaries and how they go about their work. Missionaries, you know, we usually think of somebody that goes to somewhere like, you know, Africa or Thailand or who knows what, you know, goes to some foreign country far away, other side of the globe, and ministers there. My second cousins, when I was growing up, I had my dad's cousin and her family, they were missionaries when I was growing up. They were in, I believe Central America and Mexico for a long time. And now, the son, it's my second cousin, he's in, with his family in Colombia. And so we think of missionaries, you know, as something like that. You pick up your family, you go somewhere, you set up a home, you know, you stay there for, you know, 4 years, and then you come home and do a little, a little tour and kind of, you know, raise support and tell everybody about what's going on the mission field. And we all celebrate and clap our hands and have cake and punch in the fellowship hall after the service and just praise God for what he's doing over there and that these people answered that call so that we didn't have to, that kind of thing. And, you know, that's what we usually think about, you know, a missionary. But I got to thinking about missionaries a few years ago because when my wife and I moved to Florida to take on the church that I'm pastoring in Zephyr Hills, my in-laws came down for a visit a couple months later, and my father-in-law said something about, "You guys really are missionaries down here, aren't you?" And that struck me a little bit. I thought, well, no, I'm clearly not. I'm the pastor of this church. You know, that's what I'm doing here. But I really got to thinking about it, and I thought, you know, what makes a missionary? It's not just going to a different place and having to learn a new language and how to, how to speak to those people that you're living amongst. I really thought that, you know, as I thought about what a missionary is, I got to realizing that a missionary is somebody who has to come into a culture other than the one that they are native to. In other words, the place where you grew up, you know those people. If you didn't move around a lot, if you stayed in one place or one general vicinity or area, you get to know the way that part of the world works. You get to know the way those people are, and you get to, you know, be familiar with their way of life and the way they, even if it's somebody speaking the same language throughout one country or in different countries around the world, you know, we all utilize it in different ways and have different slang terms and different just isms in how we talk. And so you get to know that culture very well, or that slice of the culture very well. But if you move to a different area, I don't just mean like a town or two away. You know, if you move to a different region of the country or a different part of the world, you really have to be able to learn and adapt. I remember when I moved out of Michigan and we would say things like, "You want to drink some pop?" or how are you guys doing? And that's really an exaggeration. I can't even do it anymore unless I'm there. If I go back home to Michigan for a visit, I start sounding like I was from there again. But then I moved out of Michigan. I lived in Nashville, Tennessee for about 11 years. And things were different. I noticed that immediately. I mean, obviously, I was in the South, and, you know, one of my first interactions with somebody after I'd started my new job, you know, he's leaning against a brick wall, smoking a cigarette and saying, "Well, son, you're in God's country now." And I just thought that was weird because most of the people I knew went to church. So, I didn't know what that meant, but I started learning what that meant and started learning that there's not just one church on every corner, but maybe two or three churches. And everybody talks about the church they're part of, but most of them haven't been there in a while. They don't know the name of the pastor, and they certainly haven't served anywhere or given a tithe check or anything like that. They're just, you know, that's the church that they were last affiliated with, so they still call it their church. And as we, you know, as we really look at, you know, what it meant to live, you know, as I looked at what it meant to live in the South compared to in Michigan, I had to learn a lot of things about how to talk to people and what they meant when they said certain things. And, you know, every road had three or four different names, and you had to know which one to call it properly, because if you didn't call it by the name that the local people called it, you wouldn't know how to get anywhere. And I started learning a lot about the way people lived and some of the intricacies and differences between Nashville, you know, in the South versus where people said I was from, as they kept telling me I was a Yankee. And I always thought where I grew up that Yankees were over farther east, and we were part of the kind of the leading edge of the Midwest. In fact, Michigan's kind of all its own. We're better than everyone else because we're a peninsula and we stand out. Well, then I moved from Nashville after living there 11 years, and my wife and I went down to Florida. And a lot of it was familiar because a lot of the people were from up north and they'd grown up north. So I knew how to talk to a lot of them. And yet a lot of what I found in Florida was so different also. It's a very seasonal culture. There's a lot of people that moved here because they hated the cold weather up north, or a lot of people actually grew up here. It's hard to find one because there's so many transplants, but yeah, every now and then you find people that grew up in Florida and lived here their whole life, and they've literally never seen snow in person, not even a little bit. They've never been out of Florida far enough north to see snow, and that just blew my mind. And so as we were down here, the culture was somewhat familiar, but I still had to learn a lot of new things, not just where stuff was, but really how the people here lived. But one of the other things I realized about a missionary is not that just that you have to learn a new culture, it's that you're actually working, you're working to see a change in the way people live. And a lot of times people can take resentment to that. If you just come into somewhere, especially if you move from north to south, they'll call you a carpetbagger, because there was a time when Northerners packed up their stuff in a carpet bag on a stick over their shoulder, you know, kind of thing. You know, they would carry these carpet bags as a suitcase, and they would move south and they would try to teach the, you know, the industrialization ways of the north. They would try to teach it to Southerners and teach them how to do stuff more efficiently and better. And the Southerners didn't want that. They wanted to do things in the pace that they did them and in the way that they did them. And they were resentful to these Northerners coming down, especially after, since this was in the time after the Civil War and they still were carrying wounds from that, they didn't really want to hear it from them, you know? And so, coming to the South, you know, or somewhere you might go, and if you just came down and said, "Hey, I'm going to change how you live," they're not going to take kindly to that, not right off the bat. But you have to live there a while and assimilate into their way of life, which is a challenge for missionaries, because there are some aspects of life that people do that are contrary to the way Christ would call us to live. And so you definitely have to sort that out. You have to, you certainly have to live the way that Christ would call you to live, but then also assimilating into that culture, you have to adopt some of their ways of doing things and their way of looking at things, if you're ever going to fully understand them and if you're ever going to have an impact on their way of living. And for certain, if you're going to change somebody's way of living, it has to be a a change that's needed. In other words, you have to actually perceive something that's not right about the way someone lives in order for you to propose a better way. If they're doing everything well and they're living a fruitful and prosperous life and it's not harming them, then why would you want to change it? But if they're living life in a way that's destructive and causes loss to human dignity and human life, then by all means, there's something noble and worthwhile in working to bring change to that. I've witnessed segments of the population that they live a certain way because nobody taught them that there was a different way. Nobody told them any better. We see this, for instance, in the projects where people are living on the fourth and approaching the fifth generation of living totally on welfare, not like supplemented to help get them by, but living completely on government handouts. They don't know that there's a different way to live. That's the only slice of life they've seen. Nobody's ever taught them anything different. And so when you get somebody that breaks out of that, they graduate high school and go off to college and go out and get a job, a lot of times their community they grew up in will ostracize them. I saw this where I grew up in Michigan. We had trailer parks there. Where I live in Zephyr Hills, Florida, we have trailer parks, but they're all 55 and up for the most part, deed restricted. You have to be retirement age. But in Michigan, we had trailer parks where families lived, and they were usually not great. Some of them were okay, but everybody had a dream of getting out, you know, like living in a house or maybe even an apartment, just not living that trailer park life. And I remember hearing a kid from my church youth group that I was friends with, and he was talking about somebody that was one of his neighbors at one point. And he said, well, there was so-and-so, but he got out. And I knew what that meant. I knew what he was saying. You know, he got out of that life and got into something better, more suburbia-minded than trailer park-minded. And you could hear a bit of a jealousy and yet a longing to be able to do the same thing. And so when you've got, when you've got people that don't know any better, they don't know a different way of life or a better way of life. And I'm not talking like looking down your nose at somebody. I'm talking about elevating somebody's self-image, somebody's viewpoint of human dignity. That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. When somebody doesn't know any better or know any different, they need somebody to show them that there's a better way. But you can't do that, and this is my main thought or my main point, you can't do that from outside of that community. In other words, you can't be on the outside of a community shouting into them and telling them there's a better way. You can't be you can't show your concern for them and for their way of life unless you become one of them. Now, that doesn't mean you have to live just like them or sound just like them. You certainly can be different and perhaps should, because otherwise they'll see you as totally the same, totally equal, you know, living just like them. So there's no way you could offer them anything better. You certainly can show them what a better life is like. For instance, if you move into a street that has houses that are just all falling apart and messed up, and you begin to clean up the house that you live in, to fix the shutters, replace the broken window panes, scrape off the paint chips and paint the house, clean up the yard, clean up the trash, keep it mowed and trimmed, plant some bushes and flowers, you know, it might rub off on your neighbors, and you might be able to show them a better way of keeping house, a better way of living. And so you haven't gone in there and judged them, but you have, in a way, shown a type of judgment on that lifestyle by living a better way, by living a way that's more dignified, a way that's really happier and more pleasing. And so in that way, you might be able to begin to change the face of your neighborhood. I think about this, and I think about what missionaries do. And I think a lot of times we've gotten the job of a missionary wrong. For instance, a lot of times we have this idea of colonialism, we've called it, you know, where we go in countries like, you know, Britain, France, Spain, whatever, they would go and they would make colonies in different parts of the world and try to teach them and force upon them their way of living and doing things and governing themselves. And some places that honestly probably worked a lot better than what was going on there. But in most cases, or many cases, we've obliterated people's way of life and their own culture. And sadly enough, we've actually done harm to their dignity and self-worth. Maybe at times bringing a lot of better solutions, like especially medical, you know, medical care and medical practices and things like that, that we've helped out along the way. But it always brings costs along with it, cost to their dignity and their ability to care for themselves and to maintain their community image or nature that they have together, their picture of community that they have. But missionaries, a lot of times, yeah, we've gotten it wrong when we tried to colonialize people in order to bring them to Christ. In other words, we said, well, how can we teach you to be a Christian unless we first teach you to be like us? And so we would come in there and teach our ways. I had a pastor, and his wife was, she grew up a missionary. She was Irish, and she talked about the place where they were at on the mission field. Nearby, there were American missionaries all over the place, and she went to a school for missionary kids that taught in English, and all of her classmates were American missionary kids, and they would bring America with them to the middle of the jungle. She said, we lived so deep in the jungle that only Land Rovers could get around through there. The, you know, the mud holes were bigger than an elephant, and you have to, you know, the only thing that could get through those trails was a Land Rover. But she said the Americans, they brought America with them. They would even bring swimming pools and all the luxuries of America that they could bring. They would bring that to the mission field. They never really assimilated into the life of the people around them. They never really became like them. You know, the Apostle Paul said, I became all things to all people so that I could by all means win some. You know, he wanted to do whatever it took to win people and to reach people for Jesus Christ. He wanted to do everything that he could to be like people in a way that they would listen to him and he could understand them. So perhaps missionaries have gotten it wrong a lot of times, and maybe we've gotten it right too. Maybe there's some validity or some value in that approach, because like I was saying, you've got to be able to show people a better way of living. And yet we shouldn't do it in such a way that they can't relate to us at all on a human level. So there's got to be a balance there. But when we came to Florida and my father-in-law said that we were missionaries here, I began to realize how true that was, because I'd already begun feeling like my calling, and by the way, my calling to this church in Zephyr Hills was very, very definite, very certain. And maybe I'll talk about that some other time, but there's nothing you could do or say at any point to try to convince me that God didn't call us here. I know for sure that he did. And so I began to think about that, though, because I'd already in those first few months had this thought that my calling here was more than just being the pastor or shepherd of First Church of the Nazarene in Zephyr Hills. Although I have a strong passion and calling to this local church, and I've certainly given a lot of my life to serving it and will continue to do so, I felt like it was bigger than that, and there was something more that God was calling me to do. So I began to kind of explore that, and it took several years to really start to see the picture of what that meant. But a missionary isn't concerned with building a church, they're concerned with reaching a people. And that was the biggest way that it really resonated with me. I mean, the first immediate thing was when a missionary leaves, they leave their family, they leave their relatives, and they go to serve, and they go to a new community to be part of that community. And we had certainly done that. And it takes sacrifices, and it takes dedication and commitment. But I also realized that God had called me to the people of my community, to the people of Zephyr Hills, and not just to First Church of the Nazarene. So even though my heart and my concern is with the people of this church, I seek to expand the walls of the church to cover this whole community. In other words, they may not ever show up for a service, but I believe that my parish extends throughout Zephyr Hills. And so I seek to minister to the people in my community. But you know, the thing I realize and have a strong conviction about is that you cannot shape or change a community from the outside. In other words, you can't change a community that you don't live in. And maybe you can have an impact on it. Maybe you can have some positive change that your work accomplishes if you work in a community that you live outside of. I've known pastors that traveled an hour to their church. I've known pastors that lived in different zip codes or counties from the church that they served, and they still had a fruitful ministry. And yet, I just don't possibly see how you can change a community from outside of it. You must be part of the community to really change it. I think you can be an effective pastor of your flock and congregation, but if you're really working to change a community, it's got to be a community that you're part of. And so that's kept me close here. That's kept me involved in Zephyr Hills. That's kept me involved in many different levels, and probably takes a lot of time that maybe I should have focused a little differently, and hindsight will tell that. But I believe that the work I have to do is within Zephyr Hills, because I see that there's a need for a change in this community. I see there's a need for a change from the way that people are living, because I see a poverty, not just a financial poverty, but a poverty of soul, a poverty of culture. And I see, you know, the material poverty as well. And I want to work to change that, but I can't change that from somewhere else. It has to happen from inside. I guess maybe I do that because I'm just following the lead of my master. You see, from all the way back in Genesis, Jesus was promised. When Adam and Eve first sinned, God looked down and saw what had happened, and he saw the brokenness that they had. And he says, I'll change this. I'll restore this. The seed of the woman will come forth, and he will crush the serpent's head. He'll put a death blow on him. But he couldn't do that from outside the community. So in the fullness of time, when Christ came, he came to this world to change it, but not from the throne in heaven, not from some distant place or some place where we can't relate to him or understand him. He came down as a man, as a baby, vulnerable, helpless, innocent. And he came to this world to live amongst us, to show us a better way, and to show us that there is a way to live that elevates us to the status that we were created in. The image of God, his image bearers. That's how God made us. That's how he wants us to live. That is the better way. And Christ came to show us that. And as he showed us that by his life and by his teachings and by the miracles he performed, he did that among us. He did that as one of us. And yet he didn't live exactly like we lived, because he was sinless, because he was in perfect communion with his Father in heaven. So because of that, because Christ came to live among us, perhaps he was the first missionary, and we all should follow in his footsteps, to live within the community that he's placed us, that he's called us to, that he's situated us within, to be a light in the darkness, to be that hope that shines. You can't change a community from the outside, and Jesus never tried to. But as Jesus has ascended into heaven and sits at the right hand of the Father until the Father sends him back for his return, what we call the second coming, until that day happens, he has you and I placed throughout here as his body, his hands and feet, the very representation, the ambassadors of Jesus Christ, within our communities, working to make a difference, to bring heaven closer and to empty hell of all the souls of men and women that are bound there, to redeem them, to ransom them, and to bring them to Jesus Christ. That's our goal, our job, and our mission. Work within the community that you are in to make a difference for eternity's sake. Thanks for listening. Hope you check in and tune in regularly from time to time. If you have any suggestions, please email them to me, PastorNickDeFord@gmail.com. Send me, if there's a topic you'd like talked about or taught on or discussed, or if you know somebody that would be a great addition as a guest or somebody to interview, let me know that. Thanks for listening.